All right. That was a long one, I know. So I got to unpack it for you. We'll do that in the next few minutes. I gave you some context about what's going on here. And I was thinking, as I'm prone to do, sometimes I do think. And actually every week I think about getting up here and preaching a sermon. And I think about you there because I was once there. And I will be there once again. And I try to think, if I'm listening to this sermon, why do I care about what this guy is saying? What's the point? And how's it going to make any difference for me? And I search each week. I really do. I try to find what I call the hook, something that will make it relevant for your lives. You come all the way here to church. You sit through sermons for about 25, 30 minutes. So you're entitled to learn, to know, to grow. And as I went through this passage today, we got to go through it because it's in the chronology of the life. It's about friendship. And at first glance, you look at this and you say, why do I care? I have friends. Is he going to tell me how to get more friends? Or is he going to tell me how to lose friends? What I want you to see today is this, though. In the story of David and Jonathan, their friendship is unlike any friendship that I know of. It's what I'm going to be calling a gospel-centered friendship. It's unique, and it's beautiful, and it doesn't usually happen between two guys to be this vulnerable to one another, to be this transparent, to be this loyal. But here's the hook for you. If you walk away with anything today, hopefully you walk away with the gospel. You hear Jesus. But what you have to know is what Jesus will do to the way in which you establish friendships here on out. And what I want you to do is start thinking about your friendships this evening. How do you form them? How do you carry them out? Is your friendship look anything like this? And when I was reflecting on it, I start to make a list of all the people that I used to consider friends. And when I stacked it up to this friendship with Jonathan and David, it was sad. I almost felt like apologizing to them, listing out their names and saying, I'm sorry that I wasn't this type of friend to you. Because the type of friendship they have should knock you off your feet. Let me explain why. First, I gave context here to say this. This is after the point that David has just killed Goliath. He's the hero. He was anointed to be king, although he's not king just yet, but he's going to be. He's royalty in the waiting. And when he comes back, there's three very unique and three very interesting responses to David the hero. First, the people. If you go back and read in chapter 18, when David and Saul come back, what do the people sing? They sing a song. This is the women sing a song, and they sing a song saying, Saul has killed his 1,000, but David, his 10,000s. What's interesting about that is that song's not true. Actually, when David slew Goliath, the Philistines ran. And they went after them, sure, but David probably, mathematically, we have to calculate the fact that he couldn't have killed tens of thousands. They're exaggerating. They're worshiping. Look at this. David comes back. And the people, the Israelites, should have said this. The Lord gave us a victory. But they say, no, David gave us the victory. The way of liberation is what they praise, not the fact of it. They miss the entire point of the narrative. Remember last week what I said, what David represents. He doesn't represent you and me running headlong into battle with our little slings and arrows. Rather, he represents the substitute. He's the go-between. He's the guy who says, you don't got to fight. I'll fight for you. And the people miss the point entirely. They should have said, this is a substitution. Salvation comes from the Lord. But they say, no. Give us a hero. Let us worship him. So they're misguided, first. Then you got Saul's reaction. How does Saul react? When he hears the song that the people sing and they're starting to give the praise to David, he reacts mostly like what you and I would do. He gets mad. He gets jealous. He says, how dare you? And it's at that moment that Saul, he sees the hero. And while they are worshiping the hero, he's hating the hero. Hater's going to hate. He hates on him. He starts to get jealous of him. He starts to put him in harm's way. He starts to put him into the combat. And he starts to root every time for David to fail. The people see the hero substitute. They see the substitute champion. And they say, we worship him. Saul sees the hero substitute champion. And he says, I hate him. He points out my weaknesses, my flaws. He's going to be king. I'm going to lose out. And I hate him. But Jonathan. Little Jonathan comes along. He's Saul's son. He's the heir to the throne. It's his by rights. But what does he do? He sees the hero and he's humbled. He sees the hero. And it says in the passage here that he gives him his robe and, note, even his sword. You know what that means? Not a whole lot to you and me. I don't have a robe and a sword. Do you? He did. And his robe meant king. And his sword meant power. And he says, I give it to him. I can lose, Jonathan says, if he wins. I can serve him. And in this passage, we get one of the most beautiful stories of friendship that you'll ever, ever, ever see. And you got to know it, and I got to know it this afternoon. Because if you're like me, which maybe you are, I'm probably a lot worse, you haven't had friendships like this. Friendships that say, I'll lose power, you gain. I'll sacrifice, you win. I'll give, you benefit. And I'm going to press this just a little bit further before I get into the main part of this message here. First, look at this. Jonathan should be the king next. And he says, I'll take off my robe, I'll take off my sword and give it to this guy. Do you know how stark that is? Do you know how appalling that is? It is at this, and we're, by the way, if you didn't notice, in America, we're in an election season. When in an election season do other people, candidates, bow out of the race? Do they bow out of the race when it's convenient for them? No. They bow out of the race when it says that they don't have a path to victory. When they know they've lost. And then they say, I'll support the nominee, the other guy. Which sometimes they don't even do that, right? How awesome would it be? And some of you might hope this if you're American and you're looking at the polls and the elections right now. How awesome would it be if the guy were to wake up and say, I know I'm ahead in the polls, but I quit. He's better than me. It's never going to happen. I don't think ever in the election cycle of any country, I don't know, and especially America, did somebody wake up and say, okay, I'm ahead. It's mine by rights, but he's better. He's got better character. He's the one, or she's the one. Give it to them. And this is what Jonathan does. And yeah, I ask myself, why? If I was supposed to be the king, would I want to give my sword and my robe to the other guy, the little poor shepherd boy? The people worship. Saul the king hates. Jonathan loves. And in his love for David, we see what's beautiful about friendship from a Christian perspective. First, let me say this under three headings. The necessity of friendship. Every other worldview, and I know you got friends, all of you, hopefully, I'm guessing you got friends, hopefully. I'm going with that assumption tonight. Let's roll with that. If you got friends, good. And every worldview would say friends are good for you. The Christian worldview says friends are necessary for you. You die without them. You suffocate without them. You need them, not just want them. You love them, not just use them. In Jonathan and David, what we see here this afternoon is this: the necessity of friendship, the definition of it, and then the power for it. Let me explain it this way. First, the necessity. Look back at your passage. The minute David comes back and he's the hero, how did Saul react? I want to kill him. This is perhaps one of the most dangerous, dark times of David's life. He's being hunted. He's hated. His very life is in danger. And look at this. In chapter 18 and then again in chapter 20, what does Jonathan do? He makes a covenant with him. And he says, I won't let you fall. Here's the importance. It's the most dangerous time in David's life. And Jonathan says, my friendship will save you. You need it. It's almost as if commentators point out in chapter 18 and chapter 20 that they're like bookends of David's life. During this tumultuous time, when he's on the hunt, when he's at the bottom, and Jonathan says, I'll be there for you. You need me. I promise myself, I will be there for you, even when it's not convenient for me, even in the darkest of the moments. When the storms come down, I pledge my life for yours. A way to say this tonight. Like I said, I know some of you, all of you have friends. Again, we're going with that assumption. You have friends, good. But do you know that you need them? Do you know that you're made for them? Jonathan knows David won't live another day if Jonathan doesn't step in. Jonathan knows that David will surely fall and die and crumble unless he's a friend. And he says, as surely as the Lord is between us, I'll be here. Let me press this out a little bit further, theologically speaking. Why do you need friends? Why do I need friends? Why do you and I need this type of deep, gracious friendship? You may say, yeah, friends are good. I know that, Pastor. I got it. Move on. Wait a second. Go back to the garden. Go back to the time in paradise when everything was perfect. God makes everything, and he says, it's good. He makes another thing, and he says, it's good. He makes another thing, and he says, it's good. He makes the heaven, the earth, the water, all the animals. Good, 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 good. Benediction, benediction, benediction means good word. Then he makes man. And he utters the first malediction. It's not good for you to be alone. It's not good for you and me to be alone. No man, no woman is an island. See, the Christian faith pushes it further. It doesn't just say friends are nice. You should have them. But if you're a loner, that's okay. No. Christian worldview says you need these friends. You will die without them. You'll go down to the dregs. Jonathan knew it. And God knew it about Adam. He says, it's not good for you to be alone. He goes further. God does. And he says, let us make them in our image. Why us? Who's God talking to? This is the God of relationships. Do you see this? This is the God of the Trinity. This is the God who is in the eternal dance with the Father, with the Son, and the Holy Spirit throughout all time. And he says, I want this for him. Companionship. So that when he falls, his friends will pick him up. So that when your friends fall, you'll pick them up. See what Jonathan does here? He bookends David's life. He says, David, I know without me you will die, so I will stay. And it means incredible risk for Jonathan, as we'll see in a second. God made us for friendships. He made us for relationships. You'll need friends to get through your adversity. This is why Adam gets a companionship. He gets a helpmate in the garden. This is paradise, and God says it's not good for you to be alone. You need someone. Don't forsake friendships. Seek them out. Cultivate them. Grow them. Now, hopefully I've convinced you that friendships are necessary, not just convenient. So what does a good friendship look like? What does a friendship look like? Well, Jonathan shows us. Look at this. And I'm calling it, I put it under three ways. I'll try to, whatever way works for you here. Constancy, transparency, and sympathy. Constancy, transparency, and sympathy, or better if you want to say, a friend who stays, a friend who stays, and a friend who sides with you. Stays, sees, and sides. Here, let me explain what I mean. First, constancy. You notice in chapter 18, verse 3, and then in chapter 20, verse 42, two times Jonathan makes a covenant with David. A covenant is a promise. It's not a contract. Jonathan's not saying to David, when it's convenient for me to be your friend, I'll be your friend. But when it's not convenient and you are a hot mess, I'm out there. I'm out the door. No. He says, I will be here when it's not convenient, even for me. It's constant. It's a friend who sticks with you. It's a friend who always goes into your life and never lets you down. And Jonathan says, I'll be that way. Proverbs 18 puts it this way. It says in Proverbs 18, verse 24, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. There is a friend who sticks. And Jonathan says, I'll stick to you. I won't leave. When the going gets tough, I won't get going. And the word in Proverbs, the Hebrew actually translates better as to say there's a person who has many associates, as I'm sure you have. But there's one, it says, a friend. And the translation of that Hebrew word is one loving. It says this, in essence, in your life, you can have many associates, but you need one loving you. You need these people in your life, and they got to stick with them, and you got to stick with other people. It's a covenant, not a contract. Let me explain what I mean by that. Let me illustrate really quickly in the time that I have here. When I was a younger guy, I lived in New York City, and there, by my house on West 85th Street, there was a deli. And it was a little tiny deli, and if you've been to New York, you know there's delis on pretty much every corner. But when you have one on your corner, it's kind of like your deli. Like, you know, the guy knows you. It's like, cheers. Everybody knows your name, right? And I used to go to said deli. I was a big coffee drinker at the time. Now I'm old. I can't drink coffee too much. But coffee at the time was super, super cheap, and it was great. 75 cents for a little cup. And I'd go in there, and it was a Korean man, Korean-American, and I'd go in, and I'd chat with him. I'd practice my bad, horrible, awful Korean with him a little bit. And I'd buy my cup of coffee, and I'd have a chat with him. And I loved my deli. I still think about that deli. And when I go back to New York, I try to visit that deli, although the guy's not there anymore. It's a great deli. It's great coffee. Great friendship. But if that deli raised their coffee prices, what do you think I would do? I'd go across the street. Great guy. Great coffee. Great place. Neighborhood. But I go across the street the minute that it's inconvenient for me. They never raised the prices, so I stayed there. Now I think they did. It's been so long. I shudder to think about what that deli with coffee would cost me at this point. But you see this? I was a user of the deli. And the owner, I'm sure he doesn't really mind that much, to be honest. I paid money for the services, but that's what I did. I paid for the services I used. It was a contract, not a covenant. I wasn't going to be with that deli no matter what happened in the thick or the thin. I wasn't going to be with that deli if I moved to a different neighborhood and it was inconvenient for me to go five blocks up to the street to get to that deli. Jonathan says, I make a promise to you, David. I will not leave. He doesn't have a cost-benefit relationship. He's a friend who sticks. Secondly, I said it's constancy and transparency. What's friendship? What's a true friend? A true friend is a friend who sees you. In chapter 18, verse 1, there's this really beautiful phrase, and maybe you know it. It says, Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Isn't that nice? You know what that means? It means that Jonathan and David were linked. They would have known everything about each other. There's no limits, no barriers, no boundaries. Full, complete access. See, Christian friendship is one who sticks with you in covenant, but it's one who sees you in weakness. This is the time in David's life when he's at his weakness. Remember, he's not king yet. He's very vulnerable, and Jonathan sees it. And Jonathan had every right to look at David and said, you poor, pitiful excuse of a person, get away. You do me no good. But Jonathan says, I love you as my own soul. You get full access to me, he would have said. This is the ultimate small group meeting, is it not? Where you come into the presence of another person and you say, I give you license to operate on my heart. I give you the freedom to look into my life and tell me what's going on, to speak truth to me. Jonathan would have seen David in all of his warts and his weaknesses and his blemishes. And Jonathan says, come on, let's be friends. Jonathan is ultimately vulnerable with him. And it's hard to be vulnerable. I know that. But you see, when Jonathan says, I love you as my own soul, what he's saying is, guards down, David. You get all of me. I get into every crevice of your life. That's scary, right? Think about that. For you to say that to another person, for you to say, come on in, have what may. Tell me. And you may say, wait a second, I don't really like that. That's not the way I was raised. There's some parts of my life that my friends, they don't get access to. I like my friends. They're nice folks. But they don't get to say everything about my life. But Jonathan and David, do you see this friendship materializing? They're in each other's business. They're vulnerable. They're transparent. And it's scary for you and me to think about that. But it's necessary. C.S. Lewis, in one of my favorite quotes of the Four Loves, he talks about this. In his book, The Four Loves, he says this, to love at all, is to be vulnerable. Love anything, and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your own selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. To love anything at all, he says, is to be vulnerable. And he goes and finishes by saying, Eros. Eros love. The love between the man and the woman. Romantic love. Eros love, he says, will have naked bodies. Friendship. Naked personalities. So what he's saying is, you don't want to be vulnerable to people? Good. Lock your heart up. And it'll grow and mildew and age and old. You'll never be broken, but it'll never be truly held. And Jonathan says to David, I love you as my own soul. Come in. Speak truth to me. It may hurt. I want it. Lastly, friendship is a friendship. Christian friendship is a friend who sticks with you. A friend who sees you. And a friend who sides with you. Look at the story of Jonathan and David in chapter 20, verse 41. It says that they weep together. You may not think much of that. Like, I wasn't much of a crier, although Dennis got me crying this afternoon when leading praise, and now I'm becoming like more mushy in my older age, I think. But I don't know if you cry with many people, but you don't, if you do, you know what this means. You know what this means? Listen to your life or look at your life. Who do you cry with? Who are the people who can stand right next to you and cry with you? Those are your friends. And I called it the word sympathy. And the way, if you actually break down the word sympathy, what it actually means is having common passions. Simpatico. A friend is one who sticks with you. A friend is one who sees you and stays. But a friend is also one who stands side by side with you and says, I'll weep with you. And if you've ever cried with someone, you know what that bond does. When you and a friend can look at the same thing in life and say, I'll cry about this with you. I'll weep with you. I'll hold you. You've come alongside them, and they you. You now have sympathy with them. It's as if David and Jonathan were looking in the same direction, and C.S. Lewis again in Four Loves. Later on, he says this. He says, true friendship begins. True friendship begins when you look at the other person and go, wait, you too? When you can look at another person and say, you too? You've been hurt the same way I've been hurt? You too? You've had the same joys that I've had? You too? You have problems with your kids like I have? You too? You have a problem in love like me? You too? And C.S. Lewis says, then you've come alongside. You have sympathy. You have Jonathan-David friendship. And you will weep together, and it'll be beautiful. There's nothing that Jonathan and David really had in common. One's a shepherd boy. One's the king-to-be, supposedly. Jonathan says, I give my robe, I give my sword to him, because God chose him. They see the bigger picture. They see what God is doing. At least Jonathan does. Now, in the couple minutes that I have to close, how do you and I get here? What I just laid out for you is a rather daunting portrait of friendship, is it not? What I'm in essence saying to you is that with you and your friendships, you need to stick by the people, no matter what. You need to see them and let them see into your life. Ooh. Could you imagine? One preacher once said, if somebody took all the thoughts you have in the day and put it on the internet, scary. Creepy. And you're supposed to let a friend see your soul. And in the end, you're supposed to come alongside them and weep with them in their sorrows, dance with them in their joys, no matter what. How do you get the power to do that? Well, Jonathan says it. Jonathan has this interesting line where he says, David, and it's at the end, if you look in chapter 20, at the end he says this, the Lord shall be between me and you, and between my offspring and your offspring forever. That's an incredibly weird thing for one dude to say to another. Especially when one of them is supposed to be king because his daddy's the king and the other one's a little poor shepherd boy from Bethlehem. And Jonathan says, I lose, you win, and I'm okay with that. I will suffer if it means you get elevated. Jonathan is the would-be king who loses power to give it to another person. The Lord shall be between me and you. And as a result, Jonathan's life is forfeit. Look at this. Saul, do you notice in the passage, there's a little line in there. Saul says, he throws the spear. Who does he throw it at? A couple times he throws it at David, about six, we think. One time he throws it at Jonathan. He says, you choose him, I'll kill you. Jonathan says, bring it on. What would it mean to be that kind of a friend? How do you be that kind of a friend to somebody? To say, I'll take the spears and the slings and the arrows. Give them to me if it means you're spared. Sound familiar? There's another one. A greater Jonathan that comes. And this guy, when he comes, he says this. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all that I have heard from my Father, I have made it known to you. You did not choose me, Jesus says, but I chose you. Look, brothers and sisters, as I close, what's going to make you vulnerable to another person? Only when you know that he was vulnerable to death for you. What's going to make you sympathetic to another person? Only when you know that he weeps for you. What's going to make you a friend to another person? Only when you know that the Lord of the universe says, I don't call you a servant anymore, I call you my friend. Jonathan was a friend who risked his life. Jesus is the friend who gave his life. He was supposed to be the king. He was the king. He is the king. But he says, I'll come to earth. I'll lose power. I'll suffer. I'll die. Jonathan, David, great story. Good friendship. You and I get something better. We get him. He's on the cross and he looks at you and me and he sees us and he knows us. He says, I'll stick by you. I'm not going anywhere. I call you a friend, Jesus says, and it makes all the difference for the way in which you and me will call someone else our friend. Jesus was vulnerable. He didn't come down from the cross. When it was convenient, he died. That's your friend. That's your king. Now, push it out to your life, your friendships. Go in prayer now. Consider this, what Jesus would do as a greater Jonathan for you, and then therefore what you might do for others in your friendships.